Okay, good morning.
So this morning's daf is daf Lamed Zayin. Yesterday we left off on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. We'll just quickly cover that ground. So the particular question that we were dealing with the Gemara there was if someone separates Truma on behalf of his friend from his own crops. So you had a pile of truma here. You didn't touch that pile, and instead he took from his own crops and he took truma. And the question was, who gets the tovas hanah? Who gets to decide which kohen the truma goes to? Is it the person who the pile belongs to, who the truma is being taken on behalf of, or is it the person who separated the truma? And so we're going to bring Tashma. We are 8 lines from the bottom. And if only every raya in the Gemara was as simple as this, it's going to bring a Tashma, which is going to address the point directly. The Amar Bavo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Bavo said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, it's going to give you 3 cases where someone is mafresh something on behalf of someone else and what the halacha is. So Hamakdish Mosif Chomesh. So the halacha is, we alluded to this yesterday, the day before, that we talked about the idea of Karen V'chomesh, and so when you're redeeming something, you have to pay the principal, and you have to pay an additional fifth. That fifth only applies if it's the owner who's redeeming it. If someone else is redeeming it, then they don't have to pay a fifth. So the question is, in this case, if someone was makdish an animal, the animal got a mum, and so they needed to give a new animal. So who is it that has to pay the fifth if they're the one that redeems it? Is it the person who separated the animal on behalf of his friend? Or is it the person on whose behalf the animal was separated? And so the Gemara says, in that case, the makdish, the one who consecrated it, so the one who did it for his friend, is the one who has to pay the chomesh if he redeems it. So basically, if I was mafresh a carbon in behalf of my friend, if I redeem it, I have to pay the fifth, because I'm considered the owner for that purpose, whereas he would not have to pay the fifth if he redeemed it. And now, the opposite in a different case, so meschaper osa tmura, if I separated on behalf of my friend a karbon for him, and the question is, there's a halacha of tmura. Tmura is, if someone tries to substitute one animal for another animal that belongs to Hekdesh, he can't really accomplish that. And in fact, the halacha of tmura is that not only does the animal that he was trying to be poda remain hektish, but the animal that he made a tmura on its behalf is also hektish. So you end up with 2 animals that are hektish. Now this halacha of tmura is relevant only to an owner. Only an owner can do tmura. So in this case, it's the one on whose behalf, before we said that the makdish who has to pay chomish is me who's separating it from my friend. However, in the case of Tmura, it is the one on whose behalf it is being separated is considered the owner for purposes of being able to affect Tmura. Neither of those are affecting our particular question. But the third part of that brisa says, "Va'atara mishalo, al-she'ena shalo," if someone separates Truma on behalf of his friend from his own crops for his friend's crops, Tovas Hana shalo, the Tovas Hana belongs to the person who is mafreshit. So the brisa is very explicit in answering our question. The question was, who gets the Tovas Hanah? And the Braisa tells us that the Tovas Hanah belongs to the one who separates Truma on behalf of his friend. So we've now completed that sugya. We're going to go back now to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said, we talked about the question, we were dealing with various cases where if someone is forbidden to have Hanah from another person, various things you could do. So we talked about the half shekel, we talked about paying his debts, we've been talking about being able to be makriv the Zav and the Zavas and the Mechusar Kapara. One of the things we spoke about was with the fact that the Mishnah said, Melamdai Medrash Halachas V'Hagadas. You can teach him Medrash Halachas and Hagadas, Avolo Yilamdenu Mikra, but you can't teach him Psukim, you can't teach him Chumash. And in fact, the sugya we're going to go through now, I misspoke a couple of days ago, I referenced something in the Rishonim, which is actually more basically covered here in the Gemara. But the Gemara is going to talk about what's going on here. Why is it that he cannot teach him Mikra, but he is allowed to teach him other things? Wouldn't they all be giving some kind of benefit? Now, the Gemara, where it starts off from, it's not talking about the benefit he gets from learning. It's not the fact that if I teach someone, they're not being nene from me in the sense that is a problem for Hanah. And that is, the Ran explains it lishitaso. We spoke about this the other day, that he says mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu, that mitzvahs aren't there for people's pleasure, and therefore that's not considered Hanah. If I teach someone Torah, that's not Hanah for them, at least according to the way the Ran understood it. So what is the Gemara talking about here? The Gemara is talking about the fact that if ordinarily you would pay someone to teach you Torah, and he teaches you Torah for free, so he's being nana, he's being mahana you. So we're talking about a place where they pay. That's what we're going to see in the Gemara. And so there's this distinction that says that you can teach medrash halachas and agadas, but you can't teach mikra, you can't teach chumash. So the Gemara says mikra my time elo yulamdeno. Why can't you teach him chumash? Mishum de kamahani le. Because you're being nanahim. Because normally he would pay someone to teach, and now because you're teaching him for free, he's getting a benefit from you, and that's why he can't teach chumash. So the Gemara says, well, that's very nice. That makes sense for chumash. But if so, medrash nami kamahani le. Why is it that you're allowed to teach him medrash? Because in the case of medrash, also you're saving him the money that he would have had to pay if he was learning Torah from someone else, if he was learning medrash from someone else. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, b'makom shenotlin schar ala mikra ve'ein notlin schar ala medrash. We're talking about a place where people pay money for a chumash teacher, but they don't pay money for a medrash teacher. So therefore, if he teaches you chumash for free, he's saving you money, because otherwise you would have to pay for being taught chumash. But in the case of medrash, you're not saving him any money, because he wouldn't have paid anyway. So that's why, even if he's not allowed to have anah from you, he can learn medrash from you, but he can't learn mikra from you, because normally you have to pay a chumash teacher, while you don't have to pay a medrash teacher. So the Gemara says, my paska. In other words, what kind of answer is that? That's a place where you do that. The Mishnah seemed to make a categorical statement and say you don't pay for mikra. You cannot learn mikra because you have to pay, but you can learn medrash because you don't have to pay. In other words, why is it just? What if it was the opposite? So in other words, how do you know? How does that make sense? That's what the Mishnah is telling you. So the Gemara says no, it's something similar but a little different. Hakamash malan. The Mishnah is coming to teach us. It wasn't so much coming to teach us the fact that you are allowed to learn medrash. It was coming to teach you that you cannot learn mikra. So the Gemara says, Hakamashman is teaching us that filu b'makom shenotlin schar, that even in a place where they do take schar, ala mikra shari lemishkol, the ala medrash lo shari lemishkol, that for chumash you can pay and for medrash you can't pay. What's going on here? So the Ran explains as follows, that in many cases, this is what I was saying before, that it is basic, and in other words, the Chiddush wasn't that you don't have to pay for Medrash. Why? Because in every place, you cannot pay someone to teach you Medrash. So therefore, if you can't pay someone to teach you Medrash, so then when I'm teaching him for free, I'm not giving him any Hana, because he could go to anyone and learn Medrash for free. So that's a basic fact. And we're going to see why that's so, that a basic fact, you cannot be paid for teaching medrash. But in some places, they would say, because they were concerned that people might come to pay someone to teach them medrash, they can't have someone teach them chumash either. And the Ran is saying, our Mishnah, though, is going in a place where they never made such a gzeira, and they never said that you cannot pay a chumash teacher, and therefore, in that place, you are allowed to pay a chumash teacher. And because you're allowed to pay a chumash teacher, the Mishnah was teaching you that despite the fact that some places make a gezerah, in this place where the Mishnah was talking about, you don't make a gezerah, and you do in fact pay a chumash teacher, and we're not worried you're come to pay a medrash teacher. Because you pay the chumash teacher, if I teach you for free, I'm saving you money. So that's why our Mishnah said that you cannot learn chumash from someone, but you can learn medrash, because you would have had to pay for chumash, and you wouldn't have had to pay for medrash. So it's just a distinction in the emphasis, but it's saying everyone knows you can't pay for medrash. The chiddush was, in this place, they did not make a gzeira, and therefore you could pay for chumash. Because you could pay for chumash, you can't teach him for free, because you're giving him hana. So all this sounds very complicated. Why is there such a distinction between medrash and mikra, between medrash and chumash? So the Gemara asked that question exactly. It says, Mishnah medrash, why can't you learn medrash? Mishnah medrash delo, why is it that you can't learn medrash? Dechsiv, because it's written in the pasuk, V'osi tziva Hashem ba'eis ahi l'lamed aschem. That Moshe Rabbeinu said that Hashem commanded me at that time to teach you. And the Ran says, this pasuk is simply coming to establish that Moshe had a chiyuv, had an obligation to teach the Jews Torah. Uksiv, a second pasuk is written, Re'ei, see, l'madeti eschem, that I've taught you chukim u'mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem, that I've teaching you, that I've taught you chukim and mishpatim, like Hashem commanded me. This word chukim and mishpatim is an important word, as we'll see. So he says, Moshe says, see that I have taught you chukim and mishpatim like Hashem commanded me. Ma ani bechinam, af atem nami bechinam. Just as I taught it to you without payment, so too you should teach it without payment. You should teach chukim and mishpatim without payment. Others understand that it's not saying that Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Jews for free, but rather that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe and didn't... Moshe obviously couldn't pay HaKadosh Baruch Hu for teaching him, but whatever the point was, whether it was Hashem teaching it to Moshe or Moshe teaching it to the Jewish people, there was no exchange, there was no compensation for teaching. And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that just like I taught you without payment, so too you should teach without payment. And the key words here are kasher tzivani Hashem, like Hashem commanded me. And the Ran says it can't be. I don't know why. I'm not 100% certain. I understand why. The Ran says because for sure Klal Yisrael wouldn't argue with Moshe because Hashem had told Moshe Rabbeinu b'chol yaminu l'olam, they'll always believe in you. But it seems that Klal Yisrael did sometimes start with Moshe Rabbeinu, but. The Ran understands that wasn't the point, because clearly it wasn't coming to say that Moshe had to demonstrate that Hashem commanded him to teach the Torah. So when it says kasher tzivani Hashem, it can't mean that Hashem commanded him that he should get paid. So it must be that Hashem was saying that when he says I did it as Hashem commanded me, it must be that he did it without payment. So the source for the idea that you cannot pay someone for medrash is the fact that since Moshe Rabbeinu taught us chukim and mishpatim for free, then we also should teach chukim and mishpatim for free and should not accept payment for doing that. So now we're back to the same question we've had two times. Mikronami b'chinam. So fine, so that's the reason why we don't teach medrash for payment, because Moshe taught the Jews for free. But he taught the Jews chumash also. So why is it that you can pay for medrash, but you can't pay for chumash? So Rav Omer, there's a machlokas Rav and Rav Yochanan. Rav Omer, schar shimur. Rav Yochanan Omer, schar pisuk tamim. So we're going to say that, you know what, you're right. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu taught us for free medrash, he also taught us for free chumash. So why is it that we can charge for chumash? So we're going to say because there's what you're really paying for when you're paying for chumash is not the core chumash. At its core, just like you can't pay for medrash, you can't pay for chumash. But Rav says, what are you paying a Rebbe when you teach a Rebbe to teach you chumash? You're paying him because who does a Rebbe teach chumash to? A Rebbe teaches chumash to the kids. And the kids run around. So as you'll ask any grade school teacher, part of their job is classroom management. They have to make sure the kids sit there. They don't run away from school. They have to watch them, babysitting at some level. So they're teaching them chumash, and they're also babysitting them at the same time. So when you're paying the Rebbe for teaching your children chumash, you're really paying also for the supervision, and that's really what we're going to say is you can't pay him for teaching chumash, so we'll pay him for supervising the kids. And so when we say that you can pay for chumash, it's because you could pay for supervision, and therefore because the custom was to pay people for teaching chumash, you can't be, if you're forbidden from mana, you can't do it. But it was not the custom to pay people for medrash. Why? Because medrash is something that's learned when people get older. When they're older, they don't need supervision. And so medrash, you never pay for, and you can't say that you were paying for the supervision because they didn't need supervision when they taught medrash. That's Rav's opinion. Rav Yochanan says you're paying for pisuk tamim. Pisuk tamim is basically trup. But it's not trup like an asnachta or something like that, because things like that are critical to understanding the Torah itself. So therefore, since Moshe taught chukim u'mishpatim, trup is really part of chukim u'mishpatim. So the Mefarshim discuss, it seems to be either that he was teaching fluency or that he was teaching the tune, the actual tune of the chumash, because that according to Rabbi Yochanan, is not midaraisa, the particular tune. And so therefore, that is something that when you're paying a Chumash Rabbi, you can pay him really for teaching the kids the tune that he's teaching, and that's what you're paying for. Okay? So those are the two opinions, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So now, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, so we're going to ask a question, on this. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, lo yilamdenu mikra, that you cannot teach mikra. So bishlama lamandam reschar pisuk tamim. So it works well according to Rabbi Yochanan. Hainu de lo yilamdena. That's why you can't teach it, because since you're able to pay a rebbe for teaching the tune, you cannot teach it to someone who's muda from hana because you're giving him benefit. Elo lamanda amar schar shimur. For the one who says that you're paying for supervision, godo bar shimur hu, is an adult, someone who needs watching. So presumably our Mishnah is talking even about an adult when it says you can't learn Chumash. Now what's the reason you can't learn Chumash? Is because we do pay for Chumash. How do you pay for Chumash? Why do you pay for Chumash? Because you're paying for supervision. So the Gemara is saying, if what you're paying for is supervision, why in our Mishnah would you have to pay, which presumably deals both with a katan and a gadol, because a gadol doesn't need to be supervised. So it doesn't make sense that that's what you're paying a Chumash Rebbe for. So the Gemara says, no, bekatan ketani. Then our Mishnah is also talking about a katan, and a katan is someone you do pay for their Chumash learning, and therefore there's an element of supervision that's present there also. So the Gemara says, how could you say our Mishnah is talking about a katan? I bekatan, ema seifa. If you're talking about a katan, I'll tell you the seifa. Avo melamed es banav mikra. It said, if you remember the Mishnah said, you cannot teach him Chumash, but you could teach his sons and daughters Chumash. So if you're talking about someone, who has sons and daughters. So how can you say it's talking about a katan, that you're teaching a katan, and a katan is someone who needs supervision, and when you're paying, you're really paying for supervision? If we're talking about a katan, how does he have children? Katan bar banim, who is he have? Does a katan have children? So the answer is chasuri mechsra. No, we're not reading the Mishnah properly. The Mishnah should be read as follows: v'hachi katani, lo yilamdena mikra bekatan. That you should not teach Chumash to a katan. Im haya gadol, but if he's a gadol, melamdo lo ulaban of mikra. If he's a gadol, you could teach both him and his kids mikra. Why? If he's a gadol, because if he's a gadol, and according to Rav's opinion, you're paying for supervision. If he's a gadol, he doesn't need supervision. If he doesn't need supervision, you can't charge him for money. You can't charge him money for teaching Chumash. And if you can't charge him money for teaching for Chumash, then even if someone is mudur mehana, you could still learn with him because he's not giving you a benefit that you otherwise have to pay for. So that's how we answer it. So we're, again, our machlokas, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So now the Gemara asks another kasha. Going on this machlokas, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Meisvei, tinokos lo karim betchilo b'shabbos, that children shouldn't learn something for the first time on Shabbos. They shouldn't learn something new. Avoshonin berishon, but they can review something for the very first time on Shabbos. So basically saying you cannot teach kids for the first time something new, but you can review with them for the first time or subsequent times. So that's the brisa. Bishlama, this works well. Laman damar schar pisuk tamim. According to the one who says that when you pay a Chumash Rebbe, what you're paying him for is for teaching the tune. Hainu de'en karim betchilo b'shabbos. That's why you wouldn't learn something new on Shabbos. El laman damar schar shimor amai en karim betchilo b'shabbos. In other words, he's saying as follows. So if you learn that what you're really teaching him is pisuk timen, then when you're teaching him for the first time, that is something you would have to pay for. So in other words, according to this mandam, you pay for pisuk timen, but you don't pay for kor chumash. Right? Because kor chumash you're not allowed to charge for. You can only charge for trump. So if you're teaching for the first time, you would need to pay for that. If all you're teaching is pisuk tamim, you don't really need to pay for it. And so therefore he's saying that explains why there's a distinction, because when you're learning something for the first time, that's something you would have to pay for. When you're chazering something that's pisuk tamim, you wouldn't pay for it. But according to the one who says that you're paying for supervision, what's the difference? So this is not a Hana issue. This is a Shabbos issue. He's saying, how can you, if the issue you're paying for is supervision, so at least if you're saying you're paying for Pisuk Tamim, it makes a difference what you're teaching. One thing you get paid for, one thing you don't get paid for, therefore the thing you get paid for, which is teaching something new, you wouldn't do on Shabbos, but Chazara you could do on Shabbos. But if you're saying that what you're paying for is supervision, kids need supervision, whether it's Shabbos or it's weekday. So it makes sense why there's a distinction according to the one who says you can pay for Kor Chomesh, but not you could pay for Pisuk Tamim, but not Kor Chomesh. But according to the one who says supervision, you need supervision either way, and why is there a distinction? So what we were saying is that the Schar Shimor would need to get paid in either case, so why distinguish? The Gemara says, Ula Taimech, according to your reason, Schar Pisuk B'Shabbos Mi Aser. He's saying, you were premised on the fact that you could pay for some things and not pay for others, so at least by Pisuk Tamim there's a distinction. He says there should be no distinction. Either way, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, you should be allowed to pay on Shabbos because Havlahi V'Havlah Mishra Shari. This is a case of Havlah, and in Havlah, it's permitted. So what is Havlah talking about? Havlah is something we utilize on a regular basis nowadays. So we know you can't work on Shabbos. So how, for example, when you hire a caterer on Shabbos to work for you, how is it that he does work? You're paying him for, he makes you a kiddush on Shabbos, you're paying him for Shabbos. So the halacha is that what we're doing is we're really paying the caterer for things he does not on Shabbos. So he prepares food on Thursday or Friday. So what we're saying is we're paying him for that. The fact that he also helps us out on Shabbos, that we're not paying him for, because you can't pay someone for working on Shabbos. So we were saying that there's a distinction by Pisuk Tamim, whether you can or can't pay depending on what he's doing. The Gemara is saying, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, this is a problem, because if there are some things that you pay for and some things that you don't pay for, so just pay him for the things. You're paying him during the week. You're paying him for during the week, so let him do those same things on Shabbos, and he ought to be able to teach anything at all on Shabbos. So therefore, whether you hold Pisuk Tamim or you hold that it's for supervision, the issue is you should be able to pay him for the work he does on Shabbos, and why is there a distinction? So we get past the issue, so therefore it's not relevant to the Machlokas Rav and Rav Yochanan. There's nothing to be proven from this Braisa, because we need some other understanding of the Braisa, because clearly it's not that, clearly under either opinion you ought to be able to pay or not pay on Shabbos, but there shouldn't be a distinction. So the Gemara is first going to show where we know Havlah from. The Sanya, we learned in a Braisa. Hasocher is a poel, someone hires a worker, Lishmar is a tinik, Lishmar is a para, Lishmar is a zroim. If you hire him to watch the baby, or the cow, or the zroim, then ein nosen lo schar Shabbos. You can't pay him on Shabbos. What is this talking about? These are three specific things. There's a halacha by Para Aduma. We go to great extent to make sure that there's all sorts of things we do for Tahara in the case of Para Aduma. One of the things we do is we make sure that the children who draw the water for the Para Aduma process have never been Tameh. How do we make sure they've never been Tameh? So they grow up on bedrock where there's not possible that there's any bodies buried underneath them. And when we take them to the river, they go on these boards so that there's no tumma that can hit them. There's all kinds of things we do. So we used to pay workers to make sure that these little kids stayed tahar their entire life so that they would be able to perform the paraduma process. We also have, so that's from Lishmar Satinik, to wash the baby. Lishmar Satpara, to wash the para, is also talking by a paraduma, because a paraduma, the rule is, it can't have become tame, and it can't have been worked. You can't utilize the para aduma, can never have been used for work in its life, so we used to pay someone to make sure that they didn't do work with the para aduma. Lishmar Sazroyim, this is talking about that for the Karban Omer, they used to go to the best field and they would establish, this is going to be the field that we're going to take the Karban Omer from, so they would put a guard on charge of that field. So all of these things, and the reason the Mefarshim say why it picks these matters is because you might think because they're doing something important that's for the avoda or whatever it is that you could pay them on Shabbos. And the answer is, even in this case, You can't pay them for Shabbos. You cannot pay someone for work they do on Shabbos. Ein nosen lo schar Shabbos. We don't give them payment for Shabbos. Lefikach, therefore, turn the page on the base. Im avdu eino chay bachriuson. If something were to happen to either the tinuk would become tame, or the parah would get used, or the zrayim would get ruined, whatever. If something happened on Shabbos, then the shomer is not chayev for the damage that's caused. Why? Because we know the halachas that a shomer chinam, someone who's watching something for free, is not liable for when it gets damaged. Someone who's getting paid is liable for when it gets damaged. So therefore, if the guy went ahead and watched the things even on Shabbos, that's very nice of him, but you can't pay him for that. So when he was doing that on a volunteer basis. If he was doing it on a volunteer basis, he's a shomer chinam. If he's a shomer chinam, he's not responsible if something happens to it. But if he's someone that you paid not on a daily basis but on a weekly basis, schir chodesh, you hired him for the month, schir shana, you hired him for the year, so an annual salary, schir shavua, you hired him for an entire shemitah cycle, nosin lo schar Shabbos, then you can give him schar Shabbos. Why can you give him schar Shabbos? Because we say you're paying him for the week, or the month, or the year, or the Shemitah. You're not paying him specifically for Shabbos. And that's a case of Havla, where something gets, Havla literally means swallowed up. So it's saying his Shabbos work is swallowed up with his other work. You're paying him an annual salary. You say, I'm paying you $50,000 a year. That includes Shabbos. It includes the weekday. We don't consider it as where you're paying him separately for Shabbos. And so the Braisa continues, Lefikach, therefore, him avdu. If you're talking about someone who is paid on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis, if the let's say the Parah Aduma got lost, Chayev Bachriusin, he would be Chayev. Why? Because he's a Shomer Sachar, because he's getting paid for his work on Shabbos. So you see that this concept of Havla, the fact that you can pay someone for the work they do on Shabbos, as long as it's mixed in with work they do on the weekend, on the weekday. So all of this was simply demonstrating that the Mishnah that spoke, the Braisa that spoke about whether you can learn lechatchila something new on Shabbos, that you cannot learn something new, but you can do chazara, is not relevant to the machlokas Rav and Rav Yochanan, because according to either one of them, you ought to be able to pay or not pay, but there isn't really a distinction. So we say Elagabe Shabbos. The Gemara continues on the fourth line. Hainu time de enkarim betchila. So what's then if it's not explained by the fact of what you do or don't pay for? What's the reason on Shabbos that you don't learn something new for the first time, but you would chazar something? The Gemara says it has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. It has nothing to do with our issue of what you pay for, but rather mishum de yifnu avasun de yinuka limitzvasa de shabsa. So this is very interesting. The Gemara says, why is it that you can't learn new things, can't teach kids new things for the first time on Shabbos? Because you want the children's fathers to be able to spend time with them on Shabbos and teach them the mitzvah of Shabbos. So what is that? So if they go to school or they're learning with the Rebbe, the father is not going to want to interrupt their learning. And Shabbos is the time of the week when fathers and parents have time to spend with their children. And we want them to be able to spend the time with their children and make them value the mitzvah of Shabbos. And so therefore, if we let them learn for the first time, the father or mother isn't going to want to interrupt their learning. But if all they're doing is chazaring, they don't need the Rebbe or that's not as important. They could tell the child, it's okay, you'll chazar after the meal, and now we're going to have our meal, whatever it is. So the point is, the reason you don't learn something new is because we want to make sure that families interact and have family time on Shabbos, that the Gemara sees that as a critical goal. Or else I'll tell you, what's the reason that you can't learn for the first time on Shabbos, but you can chazer? Mishum de b'shabsa achlin v'shasin v'yakir alehon alma. He says, because why can't you teach him something new for the first time? Because on Shabbos you eat and drink a lot, and v'yakir alehon alma, the world weighs upon them. But it means that they don't feel so good. You don't feel so good when you eat a lot. And if you eat a lot, you're tired, you're sleepy, whatever it is, and therefore to learn something new for the first time is hard. So instead, a Rebbe should always chazer on Shabbos instead of teaching something new because people are schleppy because they've been eating a lot. Kid Amar Shmuel, like Shmuel says, Shinui Vest Tchilas Cholamayim, that changing a routine is the beginning of the stomach illnesses. If you remember, we actually had this in the end of Ksubas. The Gemara was talking about that a man can't force his wife to move from this city to that city and things, if you remember. And then we had this idea that Reb Shimon Gamliel said that you can't move even from, you can't force your wife to move from a bad place, a bad neighborhood, to a good neighborhood. And we said, why? Because even to move to a better neighborhood, if she's going to change the routine and change the food, it causes stomach illness. So that was the same opinion of Shmuel. But here it's saying that that's why we don't teach something new on Shabbos, and we only teach things that are chazara. Okay? So fine. So now we've finished asking questions on Rav and Rav Yochanan. So Rav is the one who says that when you're paying for mikra, you're paying for supervision. Rav Yochanan says you're paying for teaching the tune of Pisuk Tamim. So the Gemara says, Ulamanda Amar Schar Pisuk Tamim, my time aloyamar Schar Shimer. So we're going to ask, why do they argue with each other? So the one who says that you're paying for the tune, why didn't he want to say that you're paying for supervision? So he says, Kasavar Banos Mikabayan Shimer. Because he had an issue, which was that would daughters need shimur. Okay, so what this is premised on is the fact that girls are, I guess, less rambunctious than boys. So boys, you know, the Rebbe needs to watch them carefully because they're going to run out, they're going to run here, they're going to run there, they're going to go out on the street. Whereas girls, some of the Rishonim say, because kolkvuda bas melech penima, that girls are modest or whatever it is, or maybe they're just better behaved. The girls don't run out, so the girls don't need supervision. Now, the Ran brings a different gear, so which we don't necessarily have to get into right now. But Nerzi is saying the issue is that since we see, and again, there's different ways that Rishonim understand this, but let's just go with a simple one. That since we said in the Mishnah that you could teach Banim, that you could teach his sons and his daughters, right? So we said you can't teach him Mikra, but you could teach his sons and his daughters Mikra, right? Now, daughters, if all you're ever paying for in Mikra is supervision, then what? Why do you need to tell him that he could teach the daughters? Of course he could teach the daughters, because the daughters don't require supervision, and therefore, if they don't require supervision, you can't pay the Rebbe for teaching them, because that's all you were able to pay for is supervision. And if you can't pay for it, then if you do it for them for free, you're not giving any hana. So what would be the chiddush of the Mishnah? So clearly, from the fact that the Mishnah needed to tell you that you can teach daughters, it must be that you could pay for daughters. If you're paying for, the only thing you'd be paying for is supervision, and daughters don't need supervision. So from the fact that the Mishnah needed to tell you that you can teach his daughters, it must be that the reason that you would not otherwise be able to teach them, it cannot be because they lack supervision. So that is why Rav Yochanan did not want to say like Rav. L'man damar schar shimor, my time aloyamar schar pisuk tamim. So according to Rav, who said that you're paying really for supervision, why didn't he say that you could pay for teaching the pisuk tamim? Because he says, kasavar pisuk tamim deraisahu. Because he holds, and as we said before, that even the trup is for sure deraisah. That's in the Torah. But he holds, Rav holds, the reason Rav didn't want to say pisuk tamim is because he holds that pisuk tamim is also deraisa. If pisuk tamim is part of is midaraisa, is part of the Torah, then it fits within chukim and mishpatim. And chukim and mishpatim is what Moshe Rabbeinu said you can't charge for. So if you understood that pisuk tamim is not really part of the Torah, so then Moshe says, I taught you chukim and mishpatim for free, you have to teach it for free. That only includes things that are included in chukim and mishpatim. So if something's derabbanan, it's not included in chukim and mishpatim that Moshe Rabbeinu taught for free, so you can charge for it. But if you hold that pisuk tamim is midaraisa, then when Moshe Rabbeinu told people, I didn't charge you for pisuk tamim, that included the tune or the trup. So that is why that Rav did not want to say like Rav Yochanan. Now, where do we see this idea that pisuk tamim is deraisa? The Amar of Eka Baravin, Amar of Chananel, Amar Rav. The Rav Eka Baravin said the name of Chananel, said the name of Rav. My dechziv, what's this that's written? Vayikaru b'sefer Torah ha'alokim, that they read in the sefer of the Torah of Hashem, mefarash, either explicit or explained, v'sum seichel, and they gave thought to it, v'yavinu b'mikra, and they understood what was written in the psukim. So this is a pasuk that's written in Nehemiah, that when Ezra went up to Eretz Yisrael, and it was Rosh Hashanah, and he taught Torah. And this is the pasuk that's describing how he taught Torah. So now the Braisa analyzes this pasuk. Vayikaru b'sefer Torah selokim, that it says when they read in the sefer of the Torah of Hashem, ze mikra. This was he taught them psukim. When it says mefarash, ze targum. This is targum that when it was explained was because they gave targum, which would be targum like targum onkelos. V'sum seichel, and you should give seichel like thought. Elu hapsukim. This is talking about how the psukim are broken apart into pieces. And so obviously, when you look in the Torah, there's no ends to psukim, but they're saying he taught them in order to make each pasuk a discrete thought or concrete thought. What we refer to as psukim was what it says, sum seichel, because it helps the thinking, because it helps you understand the psukim, if it helps you understand the Torah if it's broken into psukim. V'yavinu b'mikra, and you should understand what then they would understand what's written in the psukim, ze pisuk tamim. That is pisuk tamim, that is this tune that they would teach. So the tune itself helped them learn. So you see that in the days of Ezra, that they had, that they were teaching Pisuk Tamim, and the Mefarshim explain that because if it existed in the time of Ezra, how does that prove that it's Midaraisa? Maybe Ezra was Masakin or someone before him. It's because we say that there's nothing that's written in Tanakh that wasn't established by Moshe Rabbeinu. So the idea is, if they were teaching Pisuk Tamim in the time of Ezra, it would mean that was something that existed at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. If it existed at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, then it is Midaraisa. If it's Midaraisa, it's part of Chukim and Mishpatim. If it's part of Chukim and Mishpatim, then you can't pay for it. If you can't pay for it, then you should be allowed. So that gets into this question. In other words, if he holds a piece of time in his deraisa, that's why you can't pay for it, because it's included in Chukim and Mishpatim. And so Rav didn't want to use Pisuk Tamim. He wanted to explain that you used supervision. Now, according to those who understand that Pisuk Tamim is Midrabanan, like Rabbi Yochanan, how would they understand via Vinu B'mikra? V'amri lo, some say, Elo HaMesoros. These are the Mesoros, which are things that are given over, for example, whether words are written spelled out, or sometimes in Hebrew there are words that are written full, or male or chaser. So this is a mesora we have, how the different words, in other words, you could have the same word in the Torah, could be written two different ways, or we have things like kri and ksiv. You see that sometimes we go through the Chumash and it's written one way and it's pronounced another way. So we're saying those are the things when it said via vino b'mikra. So if you understand Pisuk Tamim to be Midrabanan, and it would not have been taught by Ezra, what Ezra was teaching them when they went up to Eretz Yisrael was the kri ksiv or the male chaser, these kinds of things that are a mesora about the Torah. Okay, so now that we're mentioned mesoros, we mentioned this. I'm Rav Yitzchak, Mikra, Sofrim, the reading of the Sofrim, the Itur Sofrim, the adornment of Sofrim, Vekaryan Veloksivim, words that are read and not written, so that when you read the Torah, there are words that you insert that aren't even written in the Torah. Now, we're going to see that happens in Nach, I think. I don't think it happens in Torah. In other words, we don't have any point. Seth, maybe, or Michael, we don't have points in the Torah where you add in words that aren't written, but in Nach,
switch words sometimes.
Yes, right. So, in other words, but I don't think we have where. But in Nach, there are places where you would add in a word when you're reading it, but it's not written in the Torah. Uksivam velokaryan. There are words that are written that you wouldn't pronounce. You wouldn't say, even though they're written there in the Torah. So all of those things, mikra sofrim, iter sofrim, kayim lo ksivim, ksivim lo karyin, halacha lo moshe misinai. All of these are halacha lo moshe misinai, that it's handed down to us that these particular words are read this way. Now, from here to the end of the Gemara is basically going to analyze this brisa, and it's going to refer to different instances where you have it. So let's see, mikra sofrim, when it says mikra sofrim is halacha lo moshe misinai, what's it talking about? So it's words like eretz, Shamayim Mitzrayim. So the Mepharshim explained Eretz versus Aretz, for example. In other words, which is the proper way to pronounce that word? It's written the same way, but it might be pronounced differently. Some people understand the next word, Shamayim Mitzrayim, whether Shamayim Mitzrayim or whether Shamayim Mitzrayim. Others understand that the way we pronounce Shamayim is as if there's an Aleph added in there, like Shin Mem Aleph Yud Mem. So, and we pronounce it that way. But if not, if you didn't know the Mikra Sofrim, you might pronounce it Shamim or Mitzrim, right? So the fact that we know to pronounce it Shamayim or Mitzrayim is because Mikra Sofrim. Itar Sofrim, so these are like adornments or like Oter Yisrael B'Sifara, like that's the word Oter, is talking about things that are decorative terms or stylistic terms. Right? So what is this? This is talking about words that serve no purpose in the Torah. They're not there to teach us anything. They're there to create stylistic improvement of some sort. So the Gemara is going to bring multiple cases. Achar tavoru, afterwards you should pass on. This is going by when Avram Avinu invited the Malachim. Achar telech, afterwards you'll go. Achar teosef, you'll get gathered. It says, Kodmu sarim, sharim, that first came the singers, achar nognim, the ones, different form of singing. So in each case, that word achar, or tzidkascha kehare keel, that we say this hamincha, that your righteousness is like, the mountains. So the word that it says kehare keel, it didn't need to say ke. So in other words, in each case, these words, and if you look, if you want, you could look in the Ran, it walks through like what it could have said in each case, but basically these are words, or in the case of Keharekel, it's the letter Kuf, the word Acher is not necessary, and there's nothing to be learned from it, but rather the Mesorah we have is that these words are there for stylistic purposes. Karyam v'loksivon, words that are read but not written, meaning words that when you're reading this part of Nach, you should just add in these words. It says pras de belechto, when it refers to the Nahar pras, you add in the word pras. Ish de kasher yishal, that when it says each one, this is a word that is read but not written. So it says ish, the word ish is read. De kasher yishal, where it's written somewhere, kasher yishal, and again, you could look if you want, at each one of these, where it's a reference to the psukim, the word ish bidvar alokim, the word ish by dvar alokim, by dvar alokim, ba'im de nivnasa, la de pleta, es de hagad hugad, a lie the hagoren, a lie the hasaorim. So it says all of these words, halein karyim alokasvan. These are words that are read and not written. So when you get to those points in Tanakh, if you're reading it aloud, you would add in these words, even though they're not written in the Torah, you would say it when you're laning the Torah. V'kasvim v'lokaryan, which are the words that are written but not read, meaning that when you see them in Nach and you're reading them, you shouldn't pronounce them. Na de yislach, the word na by yislach, zos de hamitzvah, the word zos by where it says hamitzvah, yadroch de hadorach, the word yadroch when it says hadorach, Chomesh de pas negev, the word chomesh five by where it says pas negev, im de chigoel, the word im by chigoel, halein kasvan velokaryon. These are the words that are written and not spoken. By the way, that first you could see it just on the top line. If you look in the Meforosh and you look in the Ran, some understand zos de hamitzvah is going on ve'eschanan. But many of the Rishonim don't agree with that. So that seems to be a relatively less accepted view of the Ran, that it's actually a word that's in our Torah. But rather, most of these things, the Pshatim is that they're in Nach, and if you'd be reading these these things in Nach, you would either say these words that are not written, or you would not say words that are written. In any event, all of this is Mesorah that's handed down, that that gives us the confidence that the Torah we have today is the same Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu.